I'm sure we've all noticed the increasing interest in cookery and the increasing volume and variety of spices on the grocery store shelves. So not only are spices showing up on grocery store shelves, they're showing up in Puget Sound and sewage effluent. And I'm not sure what put this idea into Professor Kyle's mind, but he'll tell us about it.
Thank you, Loveday. When I was asked to give this talk, I hemmed and hawed and was about to say no when I realized that today is Valentine's Day. So, happy Valentine's Day, a perfect day to give this talk. And I'd like to thank you all for not getting up and leaving and going to look at the posters when you saw such a superfluous title. But what I hope to do in the next few minutes is kind of convince you that we can use silly things like spices to learn about our connection to the environment. I need to thank Jackie, who without her work in the lab, I wouldn't be talking today. All the undergrads, Kimberly, Britta, John, Brittany, Liana, and my grad student Kelsey for help. And really, Rick and Randy at King County. If you've paid attention to the literature on people studying pollutants in sewage effluent, then you would know that there's a lot of litigation, a lot of law, a lot of people suing, and a lot of municipalities are shutting down researchers who want to go in and look at effluent because there's too much anxiety over whether a community will be sued if you measure some sort of drug or something else. But I don't think anybody's going to sue us for measuring spices. So at least I hope Martha Stewart's not here today. So I think the take-home messages are pretty clear. You are what you eat, so is Puget Sound. If you eat it, Puget Sound eats it. Puget Sound sees a seasonal input of specific spices. I'll take you through about five of them and show you how they change. We eat different things at different times of the year, and so that's what comes out of our pipe and builds up in Puget Sound. And we actually see something very interesting, which is that ethyl vanillin, or artificial vanilla, is more abundant in Puget Sound than natural vanilla. So this is a petroleum-derived product that we make in order to spice up foods. And I'll tell you a little about that in a few slides. So Loveday was hoping we would get to how we got into this, and it's really the wonderful input from the students here at UW. I was out with our undergraduates on their UW's research ship, the Thompson. We were studying low oxygen conditions in Hood Canal. And I was mouthing off about being able to measure trees by making lignin analyses and look at forest reconstruction using marine sediments, which is what our lab does, and how you could really tell the connection between the watershed and the marine environment. And they were kind of rolling their eyes at me. And we started talking about pollutants, and one of the students said, you know, I don't even want to hear it. If I hear about that next tiny little compound that's going to kill me, I'm putting up a deaf ear, even though I really care about the environment. So we started thinking, well, could you investigate these links without making everybody depressed? And we were out in November. It was right before Thanksgiving. We were all looking forward to baking cookies. And so we knew we could measure a lot of spices in the lab. So the students came back, and we decided, well, let's go ahead and go measure some spices. So these are some of the spices we're measuring. We measure about 30 different spices. We can do parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. I'll show you. This is thymol. This is the major oil of thyme. Veratroaldehyde, this is the smoky kind of cotton candy waffle cone flavor that you get when you go out and buy a waffle cone. These are the two vanillas, vanillin and ethyl vanilla. This is the natural form of vanilla. This is the artificial form of vanilla. Artificial vanilla is a mixture of these two compounds, but ethyl vanillin happens to taste more like vanilla than vanilla does. So if you want to add something to flavor up a food, or if you want to add vanilla to cover up a bitter spice or a bitter flavor, you would add ethyl vanillin. Turns out that vanilla is in everything. And when I say that, I really mean it. It's in aspirin. It's in almost any vitamin you take. It's in almost everything we consume because it covers up other flavors and allows certain flavors to show through. So we use vanillin, ethyl vanillin, to a high degree in our society today. Up on the top in the white, we have cinnamic acid and cinnamaldehyde, cinnamon. We eat cinnamaldehyde and we pee out cinnamic acid, so that's the one we measure in our communal discharge. And then the two that you can't see are the two I'm not going to talk about today, theobromine, which is the caffeine version that's found in chocolates, and then caffeine itself. So you might have heard in the literature around the news that King County measures caffeine in its effluent and in Puget Sound. You can go to the deepest, darkest basin at the bottom of Puget Sound and find caffeine there. That's because we live in a society where we consume a lot of caffeine-containing products. So this is Kimberly and Jackie. They're taking sediment water or water samples. We started out measuring things in 20-liter containers. We've got it down to a 250-milliliter sample now, so we've made a lot of strides. All this work right now is being bootlegged, so these students are volunteering their time, and we're running the analyses on the lab with leftover sampling equipment and sample supplies from other grants. Nobody's given us any money yet to measure the spices, but maybe one day that'll change. We take these spices out of the water by extracting them onto solid phase extraction columns, stripping them off with ethyl acetate, and running them through a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer. These are three different sample runs. The top is a standard, so every single one of these peaks is a different spice. And this is a water sample from Puget Sound, and some of the spices are there in reasonable abundance. We also see a whole bunch of toxic chemicals that I won't talk about today. And then this is a sample from the West Point Sewage Treatment Facility, where you can see that there are some things in relatively high abundance. And we see about 600 different compounds. We know what about 200 of them are, and we don't know what the other 400 are. In a typical chromatogram, the spices are in low abundance, so really small peaks. We pick them apart with the mass spectrometer. We know what some of the larger peaks are, but as I said, we won't talk about them today because we don't want anybody to get depressed. So we call this process kind of sampling from sink to sound. We sample at the West Point Sewage Treatment Facility in Puget Sound, other marine locations. Our pristine location is a watershed up on Vancouver Island on the West Coast. And then we do sampling in rivers and streams to see what's coming into the region. You probably already know this, but this is the sludge that's taken out at facilities like West Point. And then the water that goes into the aeration basins is kind of a little murky still. And this would be the type of water that's leaving the plant. This water is the water that we sample. So we actually sample what's leaving the plant and compare it to what's accumulating or building up in Puget Sound. Let's talk about marine samples first. These are the five spices. I'll tell you all about what they are in a few minutes. So on my x-axis, I have the spices, and on the y-axis, I have a logarithmic scale of the concentrations of these things in parts per million. And the diamonds up on the top for the West Point Sewage Treatment Plant are typically 10 to 100 to 1,000-fold more concentrated than what we see in the environment. And I think the take-home message here would be something I've alluded to already, which is that Puget Sound has higher concentrations of artificial vanilla than it does of regular vanilla. And our control sampling site on Vancouver Island hardly has any artificial vanilla, and it has higher concentrations of regular vanilla. So in terms of our spicing up of Puget Sound, we've done a good job of doping Puget Sound up with the artificial spice. Then thyme and vertraldehyde, we don't see these things in our control station, but we do see them accumulating and present in Puget Sound. We have seasonal distributions of these things, but what I thought I'd do today is take you through the stuff that's coming out of our pipe so that you would have a sense of how the city is communicating with the sound. So I'm going to show you five graphs like this. This will be the most complicated one. So you're able to read faster than I can explain it. We've got sample started right before Thanksgiving of last year. We switched methods here, so I'm not showing the early data. Coming out through about a month ago, we have samples taken yesterday. We'll have samples taken tomorrow. The blue line is the flux in terms of grams of vanilla distributed into Puget Sound from that one pipe per day. And we have Thanksgiving peaks in vanilla, Christmas peaks, Valentine's Day peaks, summer peaks, and then the holidays this year showed the same sort of trend. And the red trend is the actual spice concentration in the effluent. And so there's a lot more, the concentration of vanilla coming out of our sewage pipe is higher in the summer than it is in the spring or the fall, and it comes back up again in the winter. This is related to discharge. When we have a lot of water coming down as rain and coming through our system, our discharge rates in the winter are higher than they are in the summer, and so our concentrations in the summer are raised correspondingly. To put it another way, there's more toilet water and less rain water in our summer discharge. From now on, I'm only going to look at the fluxes, so not the concentrations. The ethyl vanillin or artificial vanilla flux shows its peak at Christmas, Valentine's. We saw a Thanksgiving peak. And then we saw the same thing this year, the day before Thanksgiving, day after Thanksgiving, and I'm bopping around. Most of these high points occur on Saturdays and Sundays. So I think we're having holiday parties or cooking on the weekends, things like that. But what's interesting is that the artificial vanilla in the summer has a higher flux than it does in the winter. And if you look back at the vanilla, it has an equal flux in the summer or winter, or somewhat more similar than the artificial vanilla. So we can take a ratio of vanilla to artificial vanilla and look at that ratio. So if I had a line across here at 1, that would be about equal. And whenever the values are above 1, like in the winter time, there's more vanilla coming out of the pipe. And whenever the values are below 1, like in the summertime, there's more artificial vanilla coming out of the pipe. So I think I'm hypothesizing that this is a combination of probably two factors. One is that artificial vanilla is ubiquitous in our society. It's one of the vanillas that's added to your latte. If you spice up your latte, it's in your aspirins, it's in almost all of your drugs and your vitamins. And natural vanilla is used in our society almost exclusively for baking. We buy it when we go to the store, or organic bakeries will buy it when they produce their foods. So if you buy ice cream, for instance, and you buy almost any flavor of ice cream has some vanilla in it, and most of that vanilla is going to be artificial vanilla. So I think that in the summertime, we have a larger pulse of industrial-scaled use of spices. And then in the winter, we see more of the home baking, more of the hole up in our house, turn on the fireplace, and whip out the cooking spices type distribution of spices into Puget Sound. So we'll go through a couple of more of the spices. Cinnamon flux. This is cinnamic acid flux. We very rarely see cinnamon that hasn't passed through the body of a mammal. So we can't tell whether we ate it or a dog ate it, but presumably there aren't too many dogs and cats eating cinnamon. So we see a lot of cinnamic acid. We have our Valentine's Day, our Christmas and our Valentine's peak. This is the day before and the day after Valentine's last year. So we'll see if it goes up. We saw a little bit in the summer, and then it goes up for the holidays again. So what we are eating is almost immediately having an impact and coming out into Puget Sound. So if we use thyme as a representative of a spice that you might use seasonally, the only time we see thyme is right after Thanksgiving. And the sage fluxes are also a little bit higher here, but sage is harder to measure. And so we see a little bit of thyme after Thanksgiving. Here's the day before and the day after Thanksgiving of this holiday season. So I think that we were stuffing ourselves and then we were stuffing Puget Sound with thyme. Okay, the last one is veratrialdehyde. This is a very interesting compound to me. This is just vanilla with a methyl group stuck on the side of it. If you make waffles at home and you get them nice and golden crunchy, you're converting a little bit of the vanilla in your batter into veratrialdehyde. If you go out and you buy a waffle cone from the store or from a vendor, you're getting waffle mix that has veratrialdehyde added to it on purpose because it has that nice kind of caramelized vanilla taste. It's a very wonderful smelling spice. And that we see a peak in this spice occurring in the summer. And we're hypothesizing right now that this goes along with the artificial vanilla and that this is the direct result of everybody rushing to the Seattle Center and buying waffle cones and riding the rides and doing all those things. There's a summer warm weather peak in the distribution of this compound that's reflected in the way our society purchases and uses this compound. So ice cream sales go up in the summer, and ice cream cone sales go up in the summer. And that would be our hypothesis for why we see this particular compound. So I think I'm almost done. What we eat winds up in Puget Sound. Ethyl vanillin is not a natural compound, yet we see it as the most abundant spice found in Puget Sound. Now, we know that Puget Sound has a lot of other things in it, caffeine, chocolate leftovers. And we know from some other work by colleagues at Oregon State that these spices at these concentrations can be smelled by salmon. So they're either swimming around in a big dilute latte and really enjoying it. There are hundreds and hundreds of compounds that fish can smell, so whether this would impact them or not, I think is debatable, but it's open to at least a little bit of thought. So if you've... if you've lasted this long, you can download this recipe off the web. I'll show you our website in a second. But if you like to make these toffee squares with the spice ratio that we find in Puget Sound, then you need to dry a waffle cone and ground it up, get a little bit of artificial vanilla, a little bit of natural vanilla, run your oven at 350 Fahrenheit. I should have converted that. And serve with espresso. So thank you very much. If you'd like to hear more, you can come to our website.
Questions for Rick?
The question is, how did we pick the spices we're analyzing now? Our lab does lignin analyses, which gives us 14 predominant phenols, most of which come from trees. Many of them in their monomer forms are already used as spices. So we knew that we could measure those. And that's what we started out to do. And then as soon as we got into the literature, we realized that there were three or four other spices, including the waffle cone spice, that showed up in our analysis window. So then we called up Agilent and begged them to give us for free their $6,000 mass spectra database so we could scan our data and see what was in there. And they hemmed and hawed and finally gave that to us. And with that information, we were able to start scanning our spectra to see what was there. And then we started targeting those compounds with selected ion monitoring and by buying those standards. So we kind of a combination of what we knew we could do and then just a little bit of forensic detective work.
Do you see any, how persistent are these compounds and do they bioaccumulate anywhere?
The question is, are they persistent in the environment and do they bioaccumulate? I think there's plenty of evidence that the spices, that lignin phenols, the monomers, are highly reactive and probably are consumed within days or weeks. So I don't expect them to be bioaccumulating. The concentrations we measure in Puget Sound relative to the water discharge suggest a turnover time in Puget Sound of a couple of months. So they're not entering Puget Sound and being degraded right away. But that's a project that one of our oceanography undergrads is working on this spring.
Can you whisper into the microphone what those two highest peaks were? Those of us that want to hear can listen to them.
Well, I think we should do that over coffee. The Oregon State crowd at OSU is being sued by the FBI because they won't release the names of the cities that they've been measuring the toxic compounds. And you may have read that Oregon State, the Health Institute at Oregon State, measured recreational drug use in 15 different cities around Oregon, and they wouldn't release the names of the cities. And the county here has been great, but the county's very... We want to do the right thing, and we don't know what the answer is for privacy laws. And yeah. Is it still yours once you flush your toilet? Did we find any spices in Hood Canal? We looked in Hood Canal. We do the five stations that PRISM has and that the Citizens Monitoring Group does. And we see a more effluent-like distribution of spices in Hood Canal than we do anywhere else in Puget Sound. That's extremely tenuously linked to the concept that there are sewage issues and septic issues in Hood Canal. And maybe after we've done a lot more work, we'll know whether that string is real or not. One more?
I noticed that the 2007 winter peaks seemed larger than the 2006 winter peaks. Is there any reason for that?
The flux peaks... It depends on the compound, actually. So we saw more cinnamon being distributed in 2006 than in 2007. And then some of the other spices did a flip-flop. And I'm not sure whether we change the way we bake or whether the amount of time that a spice stays in the treatment plant influences how much spice is getting out of the plant. But we had very different rainfall years between last year and this year, and that should have an impact on spice lifetimes in the plant.